Please join me in welcoming our speaker tonight, Matt from the Friends of Bill W. Home Group.
All right. I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much for having me. It's always an honor to be able to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I'm invited to do something, I take that opportunity, even though, there are times when I get invited or I get, asked to do something, and sometimes there still is that hesitation, like, oh man, nah, I don't want to do that, and then I go and do it, and I always know that I'm able to enhance my sobriety and hopefully make a difference in someone else's. It's been taught to me through the program that you suit up and show up when you're invited. And when you speak, the reason why I'm dressed like I am, I typically like wearing jeans and a t-shirt, but it was taught to me these things, that I'm supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. And have a sobriety date of April 20th, 2017. A sponsor in my home group is Friends of Bill W. Thursday night. And I do have a commitment there. And those were all suggestions that were given to me very early on by the old timers. They pulled me in. And I want to talk a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and certainly what it's like today, being much different. Just a little bit of a background. I grew up in Southern California in a town called Yorba Linda. I was very fortunate to grow up there. It's a beautiful place to grow up in, and I absolutely had no gratitude at all going up there. I lived in a nice house. My parents, did everything they could to provide everything they could with what they had. But I had this little thing inside me called my brain. And my brain told me, even though I grew up playing sports, I grew up in school, for some reason I always felt off. And I don't know if you could identify with that, but there was always this thought that I was not good enough. That I wasn't like other people. And I just felt out of my skin. And I hadn't even been near a drink or any of that until much later. So I had this kind of thing going on at a very, very young age. And our household that I grew up in, I don't fault my parents for what happened growing up. That's not a part of my sobriety anymore. But I grew up in an environment where yelling and screaming was welcome, where I was afraid to go home. When I saw my dad's car, I was like, God dang, man, here we go again. His dad gonna be screaming because the trash wasn't out, throwing stuff at my brother, screaming at me, telling me I'm stupid, whatever. And of course he's drunk, or is he gonna be funny, ha-ha, and fall asleep on the couch? And then my mom, of course, is looking at my dad going like, what's wrong with you drinking, man? and constantly doing that. But they did the best that they could. And, my dad has been in hardwood flooring for over 30 years. And my mom worked as a doctor's assistant. And, alcoholism has been a part of our family for, I don't even know how far back it goes, but my mom's father was a severe alcoholic, worked at a brewery, when you could drink on the job, so imagine that, being your own bartender. I mean, it's like being addicted to drugs and being your own drug dealer. It doesn't end well. So alcoholism is in our family, and what I recognized over time was that I thought that was the only way everybody lived. I thought that alcoholic lifestyle that I was living as a young kid was how everybody lived. I mean, if it was Taco Tuesday, you're going to go to El Torito's and you're going to get margaritas. And you're going to get drunk. You just don't get one drink. You're drunk. And so I didn't have a lick of any sort of spiritual connection growing up. I grew up in Catholicism, and I have no opinion on any religious affiliation for anyone. I think there's a lot of good in it. But what I thought God was, you know, when I have a problem, I'm going to call on him. And that's just not the way it works. Not my own experience. So, you know, I didn't drink or do any other things throughout high school. I was afraid of drinking. I used to say I never want to be like my dad. You know, we always got daddy issues, right? I won't be like my dad. So I tried to overachieve. I tried to always be in the spotlight because I felt out of my skin. I wanted people to be aware of who I was, what I was doing, and you know, what I really wanted was to be loved, but I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to love myself nor anyone else, because the only person I cared about was myself. And but in high school, like I said, I played baseball. Had a girlfriend all through high school, and was kind of your atypical high schooler. But I still had that ism going on, and all it took was at the age of 18, I got my opportunity. Went to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. perfect place for alcoholism, man. And to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, 24/7. And I can tell you, the first time I had a drink, it changed everything. Every one of those thoughts I ever had about myself, it changed. It was like, this is gone. This is a whole new reality. I could be 6'5", which I always wanted to be. I hated being short. I still do, but you know, it's one of my things. I hate being short, right? I make fun of it because I don't like it. But I accept it today. That's the gift I was given. But I could be whoever I was, and I could say anything I wanted, and thought I can, you know, do what I wanted when I wanted. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of many years to come of lies, deceit, stealing, cheating, and running over people, because that's who I was. And somehow I managed to graduate college, and it was like all just one of those things where, you know, you start going on a run, and then it's like, okay, I need to pull it back, and you know, I'm a junior, and I want to go to PT school, so I'm going to study real hard, and I'm going to take up more exercise, and I'm going to join the boxing team, and I did that, and it's like, all right, I'm going to make it as a physical therapist. That's what's going to happen. And so I was already trying to adjust life, trying to change my circumstances, trying to do things to arrange life how I wanted it to happen. I guess I didn't get the memo that that's not how life works, but I graduated college and started applying to schools. And in my head, in my mind, I thought that this is what I was destined to be. You know, I wanted to be a physical therapist. I like helping people. I like doing everything else, but I didn't realize that, you know, your first 2 years when you're busy drinking and partying, you know, 5 nights a week, that might affect your grades. So I had some interviews. I was fortunate enough to get some interviews at some schools. And I didn't get in. From there, I just lost all hope. I remember my parents came to a private university in Las Vegas when I was there, and it just got accredited for PT school. They accepted me there, of course, because it was probably, I think it was going to be like $150,000 for 3 more years of school, something like that. And I already had my bachelor's degree debt. So my parents at that point, it was 2007, they had had some financial stuff going on, and so I didn't end up going. And I thought, you know, my whole life I've always been a failure. That's what I believed. That was the belief I had in my head. I'm a failure. I'm not good enough. And that was just compounded. And then when that happened, I was the ultimate failure. I couldn't do anything right. I couldn't be a ball player. I couldn't find a woman who would ever love me. I can't be a physical therapist now. And what the heck am I going to do with my life? And I found the answer. Let's party. And it took off like bananas. It only took maybe 8 years past that, because I went very hard and very fast. I went from job to job, having a college degree, working just odd end jobs, couldn't keep a job, and then eventually I started drinking straight vodka. I thought that was a good idea, and I was living in one of the janitor's house that he allowed me to live in, and that was fun. because I had found that alcohol lasts longer in your system because you could get it through your system faster if you just start putting a little methamphetamine with it. And I thought that was a good combination. I was real smart at this thing, and certainly had a chemistry background, so I could balance it real good. But I wasn't fooling anyone, and my life was a mess. I remember at 25 years old, I was working for a hospital as a tech, and I remember emailing my dad, and I was like, "Dad, I'm ready to come home." Like, I was just tired, tired of doing this thing. Man, I just don't want to do it. And that was the start of this process, going back home to California. And so my dad took me back, of course. And I understand that too. And me being a father of three now, it's like, whew, I get the deer in the headlights every time I think about, you know, what I put my parents through, and you know, having three kids of my own now. But I moved back home to California, and drinking and methamphetamine use just escalated. The reason why I said it was an honor to be here is because I was sometimes invited to places, sometimes, but I never showed up, because there was always an excuse to go get what I wanted when I wanted it. I felt entitled to do that, because if you had the situation I was in, you'd be doing the things I was doing, because I was terminally unique. I was just an average drunk. I was just an average drunk, and I still am. I started, you know, stealing from my parents. My dad would take my keys, and he would, I would go, "Okay, take my keys, I'll take your car." Steal his car. Go do what I couldn't do. I'll show you. Eventually, I ended up in rehab for the first time. And Dad was kind of like, yeah, I think I have a problem. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a little unusual to be drinking straight vodka and snorting and smoking methamphetamine, but I'm really not that bad. I'm not as bad as some of these people, right? I only do it once in a while. People do it once in a while, right? Normal people do, married people do. I don't get it. As long as I can keep a job and pay my bills, then I can do whatever I want, right? That was my thought process. And so once I got out of rehab, it wasn't long before I was back out doing what I was doing. Which, of course, led me to the second rehab and then subsequent third rehab. It just started getting deeper and deeper every time. My imagination wanted to make it seem like this time's going to be different. That's what alcoholism does to me. It's this lie that says, you know what? It's not so bad. It's not so bad. I can figure it out. I can do it one more time. I'll get away with it. No one will know. And that's how I grew up. You know, I had some secrets, some behaviors that I was doing as a child. I was stealing and manipulating. As a child, I could look back and see what I was doing. And you know, that progressed as more alcohol and other substances came in the picture. The delusion got worse. That brought me to some of the first meetings I went to, you know, in those rehabs. And I'm grateful that I actually went to them, because they were heavily focused on getting to AA meetings, and that's where I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous at 25. My first group I went to was a men's big book study. It was a pretty large group of guys, and I have so many fond memories of them, and I talked to several of them still to this day. One of my very first sponsors, they just brought you in there. They were like, you're going to be the greeter. You're doing coffee and cleaning up ashtrays. At that time, there was still some smoking meetings and stuff like that. And just come on. We're going to dinner tonight. Like, they wouldn't even give me an option. And I didn't understand it. I was like, okay, I guess. But I didn't know what they were doing, how, you know, that they were planting me with something that eventually they were hoping that would stick. And, you know, they taught me the way. They taught me the way. They focused on the big book. And there's a reason why typically I like going to book studies, especially big book studies and 12 and 12s. I believe in the big book, and you know, that feeling of hearing someone say welcome home when I got to go visit Dr. Bob's house, like, that was cool, man. It was a trip. I sat right there, and then understanding all the history of it, it hit me how important this thing is in my life today. So as I progressed in California, eventually I met my wife, and we were, at that time we weren't married, but we were living in Irvine. I was working kind of in South Bay, Torrance area, every day, and I was lying, cheating, and drinking and drugging every day at that point. I thought that, you know, I mean, if you're going to sit in traffic for 2 hours or more a day, then you might as well get nice and good for your drive, right? So I was doing that day in and day out, and and this is what happened. I came home one evening and I was just out of my mind, Logan. And the woman, Kelsey and I were dating long distance, and I was very upfront about the fact that I was in, that I'd been in treatment, I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of that, and so I was very straightforward with that. But she had no idea I was doing what I was doing. So I was lying to the woman that I pretty much told everything that I've told, you know, my sponsors and all of that. And she was pregnant with my daughter. She was pregnant with Caroline. And I come home and open the door, and she looks in my eyes and she's like, "You're messed up, aren't you?" And for the first time, I actually, I said, "Yes, yes I am." And she asked me, she said, "Give me one reason why I shouldn't leave your you-know-what here right now." And I said something very truthful at that moment. I said, "I don't have one." I was utterly broken. I had a moment that you have with God, and you talk to Him, and there's just no return. There's over the years of going in and out of this program, I was just tired and done. And so I knew, because of those people in my life, that all the meetings that I was going to, all the guys that I knew that were taking me in and showing me how this thing worked, I knew where to go. And the next day, after I had a nice long shower, and look in the mirror, that was not a fun day. I went to a meeting, and funny enough, it was right around the corner from my work where I was working. In California, if you really want to get to a meeting, you can get to a meeting. They're on the hour from like 5 or 6 in the morning all the way to 10, 11 at night. There's round the clock meetings everywhere. So there's really not an excuse to not get to one there. So I went back and I remember, man, I raised my hand and I said, I'm a newcomer and I need help. I don't know what I'm doing. And I was just so full of fear. I'm gonna about to be a father, and that was my worst nightmare. I was like, man, that wasn't my intention. I wasn't intending on being a father. God, you're punishing me here. I had no intention on getting sober either. So we came to the point where we had to make a choice, and it was we're either going to start a family here in Southern California, or we're going to pack up and move back home. And Kels is from here, so her family lives here. So, probably not suggested as a newcomer with like 3 months of sobriety to move across the country, and have a child, and I'll add this little note, I lived with my in-laws for about a year. That was an experience. I was terrified to leave home. I was like this lost little child. It was like, and I was crying when I'm driving. I say bye to my parents. I'm crying back to the apartment. And then I came here about a month before Kelsey came out here. So I was living with two people They didn't know who I was, really. They met me one time. I got their daughter pregnant, and I'm not married to her. They did not like me. And I understand why. I understand why. You know, and the beautiful thing is today I have a wonderful relationship with those two people. You know, but they did not like me. And it took a lot of work and really, you know, what happened was that I knew I had to have a foundation here in Suffolk when I got here. So I was here about a month before, and then I didn't start a job for about 2 weeks after I moved here. I got a job before I moved here. And man, I was going to like two meetings a day at least. I knew I had to dig in, get a home group, get a sponsor, start working through the big book, and start working some steps in my life. And you know, I always heard people talk about the principles of the program. And I think it's always important for me to read them and be aware in my daily living that am I practicing all of these principles and what are they? Because I could say principles, but what are the principles behind each step? And it's honesty, hope, surrender, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, love, responsibility, discipline, awareness, and service. I had none of that, none of that before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you could relate to this, I wanted to die, but I didn't want to die. I didn't care if I did, because I just didn't care about anyone. I didn't care how anyone felt. I didn't care about what it would do to someone else. All I cared about was myself and myself only. I was the center part of everything. And so what it's like today is I have to get out of that. I have to get out of that. I'm not that important anymore. I'm not the central part. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to be a part of, but I don't have to be number one. And you know, growing up, like I said, I thought if I wasn't number one, just don't even do it. Just don't even do it. Because if you're not number one, you're not it. You weren't meant to do that. So I learned. You know, every day, I learned something new. And what it's like today is I go to meetings. I have my sponsor. I'm looking for sponsees to work with, and I'm always willing to put my hand out, because I know that's how this thing works. And what that does for me is it enhances my spiritual condition. I had no idea that this was a spiritual solution. When I first started going to meetings and they were talking about God and all this, I'm just like, oh Jesus, I just want to stop doing what I'm doing, go get a job, you know, whatever, and life will be fine. It's much more to that. And I'm learning probably more after 7 years than I have in a long time about this program and how much I don't know. I learn every day how much I don't know. And I'm grateful for that. I don't want to ever think that I have the answers or, you know, can solve this thing. As I said today, I'm a father of three. I get opportunities to practice this program in my life today. And one of the things that is precious is time for me today. I don't have a lot of it. Having three kids, it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of, you know, getting them bathed, getting them ready, getting them to school, all that stuff. And what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me is that the more I give of myself, the better I become, and the more time I actually have. And so, if I walk out of here and I don't use what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, those principles, those tools, my wife is going to look at me and go, you've been spending how many hours a week at AA meetings, and what was that doing? You know, because for me anymore, it's about my actions, not about my words. Words do matter, and something that I've learned over time in our relationship is that pausing and sometimes not saying anything at all might be a better idea, and then call my sponsor. But yeah, today my life is not what it used to be. What it was a very, very dark place. I shared last time I was here, I had a stroke when I was 29 years old. And all those physical consequences, it might last a little bit, but until that psychic change happened, when Kels and I had that conversation, and I had my first real conversation with God, nothing was going to change it. I mean, I would just keep moving to city to city, to state to state, end up in the same situation, and just completely baffled. How did I get here again? Again! I'm doing the same thing again and again and again. And if I don't want to keep, if I don't want the same thing to happen, I have to do something different. For me, that's a lot of contrary action to how I grew up, my natural inclination. I have to learn today, even today, a day at a time, I have to learn to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. And I love exercise, always have, just kind of part of me. But one thing I know is that pain is the one requirement if you want to grow. If you want to grow your muscles, you're going to have to tear them down. And it's going to be painful. It's going to be real painful sometimes. But when you get the results, the growth, it's amazing. And this program, the men in my life have taught me that it's an inside-out job. And so no matter what happens on the outside, there's always, in my life going forward, there's going to be financial challenges, economic challenges, physical challenges. That's life. I think that, like, okay, we could pause life, nothing's going to happen, I'll be cool. No, life's going to show up. And this is my training wheels for life on life's terms. I have men in my life I could call and get guidance on, and learn how to apply this program to situations that used to baffle me. It's all a learning process for me, a day at a time. And I'm grateful for that. You know, today I'm a son. We recently took a trip out to California to see my parents and to be a part of their lives and show them my grandchildren. Not my grandchildren, their grandchildren. My children. But to allow them to have that joy, because I robbed them so many years. My mom was sitting crying at her desk at work thinking I was dead in the motel room somewhere. It's challenging, you know. My mom probably takes about 8 psych pills a day, and My dad drinks Manhattans now out of tall glasses. But I understand the compassion now, because I see the other side of the street. Because I was that guy. And I could give them love, and I talk to my sponsor often when I go out there. I go to meetings while I'm out there. But I could be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous in my parents' life. And, you know, when my mom came here, that was part of her Christmas gift. We bought her a ticket to come back. I was able to take my mom to an Al-Anon meeting. And, you know, had a friend of mine come with us and take her to that meeting. You know, this is a family deal. We're all one family here. I think if you're here, you know, we're the luckiest people on earth. There's no other place, and it's weird for me to say this, that I would ever want to be on a Friday night than to be with all of you. I would do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous because I cannot repay it enough. When I moved here, I had about $12,000 in debt. Didn't have any tools for life. Didn't know what I was doing. Lived with my in-laws. And just was completely lost in a world. And at that point, I was 33 years old. I had to lie my way with my resume to get jobs. but this program has taught me to stay put and to get uncomfortable, to work through things. You know, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I always remembered what the old timers would say, you know, just keep coming back. You know, and I kept coming back a little more defeated each time. I would probably say, just stay. You don't have to keep coming back if you don't want to. And they would say that too. You know, you can put down the sword anytime you want to. But, you know, we'll be here waiting for you. And I'm just grateful to be at a meeting. I want to thank all of you for having me tonight. I hope I said a few things that you could take with you. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Really appreciate that. You know, the spirit of the second month, step two.